The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back to Vox Markets. My name is Martin Luke, and today we've got Zinc Media with us. Zinc Media is one of those names that tends to fly below the radar for most investors, but the numbers have been quietly stacking up. Question is whether the market is paying attention. I'm joined now by Mark Browning, the CEO. Mark, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've put together 5 years of growth on most of the key profit metrics. What do you think the market is still getting wrong about this business? And where's the revenue actually coming from now compared to, say, where it was 3 years ago?
Well, I suspect the market is missing a company called Zinc and understanding what it is, partly because of its name, perhaps. It is a media group of content creating companies. There are 12 companies. And the challenge is, of course, is cutting through with a story like that. Zinc has had a history in television. It is now a content creating company across a whole plethora of different platforms, different screens, different durations. So it's quite a different company over the last 5 years, and it's highly diversified. But everything comes back to one proposition. We tell stories about life and we put them on screen. And that can mean we go to all different types of markets. So I suspect if people have come across Zinc previously, they might go, it's a television company. Actually, it's a content creating company in lots of new markets. And that's assuming people have heard of us in the first place. And part of our challenge is to make sure that we're on people's radar.
So just to dig into that a little bit more, Mark, for the sort of layman out there, what is the difference between a content creator and a just run-of-the-mill television company?
So across our portfolio of businesses, we have some television companies that make documentaries that investors may have seen on ITV, on the BBC, on Channel 4, on UK broadcasters. We have premium documentaries on global broadcasters and streamers like Disney Plus. But we also make short form content, and we make content for YouTube and for socials. We then have a large part of our business that is producing what you would call televisual content, but the buyer is a brand or a chief marketing officer. So we do long form documentary programs for Red Bull that appear on Red Bull TV and on Facebook. We're doing a large long form documentary at the moment for a major multinational company in the Middle East. So there's lots of stories that need telling. And I think the challenge that we have to articulate what we do is to go back to what drives consumer behavior here. Increasingly in a screen dominated world, what we see on screens drives our consumption. And if you believe that content ultimately drives consumer behavior, which I do, then content has an innate value, regardless of what may be happening in a certain market in UK television or in the BBC or what may be happening on Netflix. Content is driving us all to consume certain types of platforms. It's driving our behavior. You might find you're now subscribing to Paramount because you're watching Yellowstone. You might be subscribing to Apple because you really like slow horses. You might be spending more time on TikTok and Facebook because you're following some really cool content creators. That's what we do. We're the content creator behind those consumer choices that consumers are making. So there is innate value in that.
Well, Mark, I think I'm guilty of all of those. One thing I noticed when I was reading some of the background on it, you mentioned IP revenues. Can you explain exactly what IP revenues are? Because they seem to be clearly growing faster than the rest of the group.
They're the most lucrative type of revenues. So IP stands for intellectual property. And that in the UK, producers own IP. When we create a program for the BBC or ITV or Channel 4, they will pay us to make it for them. And we own the rights to that, the intellectual property. And the same applies to some international broadcasters. When you own the intellectual property, you in effect license it to the person who's brought it from you for a period of time. So if we get commissioned by the BBC for a television program, we would license the IP to them for a period of time to show that in the UK. But we, from day one, own the IP, and we can sell that globally around the world. And we have a part of our group, a company called Zinc Distribution. And their job is to take all of our owned IP over the last 20 or 30 years and constantly be recirculating it back into the marketplace. So that IP is where you've made something once and then you monetize it many, many, many times. And typically that type of revenue for us comes in at over 90% margins because the cost is already sunk on the first production. And when you sell it thereafter, it's all profit. So it's 90% margin. When we then make our own programs for digital or for socials, again, we own the IP, and every pound we get, therefore, comes back to us. So it's a multifaceted business model. Sometimes we don't own the IP. If we produce for Netflix or for Disney, their model is quite different. They are global streamers, and they pay us a lot of money to make a program, but their business model requires them to be able to monetize it around the world. So they will own the IP in that situation. So we have a whole blend of different types of revenue, but we report our IP revenues because it's fast growing. It's growing 52% year on year, and it's very high margin. So it's actually the most lucrative revenue we have.
So when you're looking out 2 or 3 years from now, how big could IP get as a share of the business?
Well, we've taken it from about 5% of our turnover to 10%. Ultimately, there is no limit to how much it could grow. Clearly, with every 1% we grow it, there is a disproportional positive impact through the line to the profit line. So it would absolutely be our ambition to be able to grow IPs to 15, 20% of our total proportion. That's assuming we stay the same size. Of course, if we grow, there'll be some proportion changes. But we want to be getting significant millions of pounds a year from IP turnover. We've targeted an additional million and a half on our current three over the next 3 years. We want to get between 4 and 5 million of high margin IP-based income. And that extra growth would flow straight through to our bottom line. If we can go from three to four and a half, that million and a half would go straight to that EBITDA line and flow straight through to operating profit.
I also note that Middle Eastern revenue jumped sharply. Is that one of the big wins you've had recently?
Yes, so we're a diversified group. We diversify through the products we have. We do television, we do event production, we do digital production, we do brand and corporate production, we do education and learning production, and we do TV commercials. There's lots of things, and of course, we have the IP. Within geography, we're also diversifying. Historically, 7 or 8 years ago, this was largely a UK business. It is now a very diversified business. We have 55% of our turnover coming from the UK and 45% from outside the UK. And that is broadly split between the Middle East and the US. And the Middle East is a large growth pillar for us. We've had businesses operating there for 20 years. We've been in country in Qatar for and Saudi for 10 years. And we've targeted rapid growth from that region. Putting the conflict that's currently happening with Iran aside, the Middle East region has been growing at 6.1% per annum compared to the UK at 1%. So that is a market that is growing six times faster than the UK. It is an emerging market. It is less competitive in some areas. And we have a long established presence. So all of the ingredients are there for rapid growth. And we had rapid growth in the last 12 months, and we anticipate we'll be able to double our turnover in that area from 8.5 million over the next 3 years because we're bringing the full firepower of Zinc Group, all of those businesses now, to that market.
One thing that would concern me about investing in a business like yours is, everyone's favorite sort of thing at the moment is AI. And, I'm often seeing things talking about, oh, screenwriters are worried about AI and filmmakers are worried about it. From where you're sitting and on AI, is that, I mean, you're clearly embracing AI, but is that still more of an R&D line for you, or is that something you're actually going to implement in your programs?
Well, last year was a big year for us in AI, and I hear this narrative, and I think there is, of course, reason to be concerned about any new technology disrupting a marketplace. We've had the same in print media, we've had the same in the newspaper sector. But look what's happened in those sorts of sectors when a new technology has emerged. There was this whole conversation over the last 20 years. Are we going to see the end of newsprint And of course, yes, largely we have, but we've all continued to consume through a different technology. We've probably bought a subscription along the way. The same with books. When the e-reader came along, a disruptive technology, it was the end of Waterstones as we know it. Foils would be shut. No one will be buying books. E-readers are 20% of the market. Actually, the market is flourishing. AI is a disruptor to content creation, but it's also a massive opportunity. As a sector, it is one of the fastest growing sectors in the global economy. I therefore see it as an opportunity. How do we make money from a sector that's growing? We're storytellers, we're content creators. AI has fantastic stories to tell. They need people to make a story out of their innovations, out of the cleverness of what AI is doing. Last year, we had income, new income stream of £3 million, which was never in the marketplace 2 or 3 years ago. And we got £3 million of new business from the sector of AI from three areas. A large AI event, which required a producer to turn it into a piece of content, a story, screens. No point putting on these events if you're not amplifying the story around it. So we did a big event for the AI sector for G42. We also did a TV commercial in AI at the request of the client. And we did a training documentary learning film purely in AI again at the request of the client. So we are an AI producer. As part of that portfolio of businesses, we can create AI content. That puts us at the forefront of an emerging sector, and I see that as a growth sector. And if we actually made 3 million quid from a sector that didn't exist 3 years ago, and we continue down that route, we will earn more and make more business from AI existing than we will ever lose from maybe some of our content becoming AI. Because if someone wants it in AI, we'll just make it in an AI. It's fine.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, you've had some big announcements recently. Looking at the CCO appointment first, what's the remit, and what does it tell about where tell us about where you're taking the business?
So, during our journey, we have ended up being a bit like a series of Russian dolls within the group. There has been the group, and you open up the group. Oh, and there's another business or quasi group that came in or was built or what have you. And that's been our historical journey over the last 7 or 8 years. What we did last year with our television companies, some of which we've launched, most of which we've done ourselves organically, but some we acquired, some before my time. We started to go, actually, we need to run this as one thing now because there's greater synergies, there's clarity of leadership, there's cross-fertilization of resource. Let's start seeing ourselves internally as one television business with multiple outlets and products. And that worked really well. What we're doing this year is doing the same thing for the whole of Zinc. And one of the reasons we can now do it is that we acquired a company 3 years ago and they were under a management earnout scheme that did require some degree of Russian doll protection. We had our group and they had their within our doll. That's come to an end. So actually, we've gone, there's an opportunity here to refresh the way we work internally. And we're talking about one Zinc. And that is about putting the firepower of all of our businesses towards the best opportunity in the market at any one time. And when we do that, we're finding we're winning business against competitors and we're entering new markets at speed because there is an awful lot of firepower within Zinc. The chief content officer role creates that single point of creative leadership that means that we can quickly deploy our resources to the best opportunity in the market without having that internal slight tension where someone goes, well, hang on, is this your budget or my budget? Are you paying for this or am I paying for this? Which you get in groups. So we've removed that internally. We've appointed a chief content officer, and that chief content officer will be have the full power to deploy the best resources to the best opportunity at any one time.
Now, I'd like to focus, if I may, also on the Celebrity Inner Circle. Now, that's a returning series, which I would imagine is like gold in your industry. How significant is that recommissioning to your full year numbers?
It's an important part of it. It's not material in the sense that we're targeting a 40 plus million pound business and this is a low millions of pounds commission. But it's helpful, of course. It's absolutely important that we pick those up. The returning nature is the critical thing for investors to understand. And I think, again, there can be a misperception here that this is a business that can suddenly disappear overnight. And any consumer-facing business like ours, where you do have to kind of pitch and win, it's not a subscription business in that sense. There's always an element of that to any business like this. But you look at Zinc's history over 20, 25 years, you look at the clients that come back every year, and we have best part of 90% of our clients return to us year on year. Some of them for the same thing, as in the case of the Inner Circle. They bought that in 2025 and they're buying it in 2026. And that's the same for quite a lot of our television businesses, where there were 13 series last year, five of them were returning, eight of them were new. And of the eight that were new last year, we hope to maintain six of them this year. And that's how we maintain that longevity of business. So it's an important win. But the other part of it is not just the fact that it's a returner, it's also our owned IP. And it's a move into entertainment, which is the most lucrative type of IP, because I suspect some investors are still watching television quiz shows from 20 years ago, coming round on UK Challenge or on Play or just on repeats on ITV or the BBC, because that sort of content is quite evergreen. And if you've made a good show and it's returning, which this now is, that will be repeated and repeated and repeated, and we will own the IP and get the license fee for that. Hopefully, another commission will come along next year, and alongside it, it will be being sold globally. And in this case, it's sold by BBC Studios, and BBC Studios are the distribution partner, the commercial partner of the BBC. So they're selling that entertainment show alongside all their other entertainment shows as a bundle in the marketplace, and they're selling them to international broadcasters.
So then, and I appreciate how you can't really divulge too much on this, but how much of next year's revenue do you already have sight on at this point in the cycle? And how does that compare with where you'd normally be? Because you've grown so quickly, I'm just trying to gauge, what's it look like at the moment?
Normally, I mean, at this stage of the year, there is a probably around 5 million quid, I suspect, that is booked that will flow through to next year from shows that are already in production this year. That's normally the sort of rule of thumb at this sort of stage of a year, but it really becomes much more important in the second half and in the final quarter. The rule of thumb that we see is that you really want to be entering a year at around half contracted for the year you're in. And then you build that up. Some of our businesses move very fast and book large part, 90 to 100% of their clients book in year. But we then look to the ratio of returning clients. And that's where we get that 90% and go, when I look at next year, I go, I know that 90% of that business will return, even though I can't see it, because that's the rhythm. And then I look at, okay, the businesses that do book business across a year, how are they doing this year? And in television, you often find that a piece of television will straddle a year because we book revenue and profit based on activity in the year. So you see how a show is productive. If a show is running over 30 weeks, that revenue will simply follow that 30 weeks. And that might mean it straddles a half year or it straddles a year end. Which is why, in this sort of business, investors shouldn't get too carried away looking at certainly not half year on half year, because I mean, it genuinely can be very misleading based on when productions were filming. And if they happen to film in a different season or a different schedule, that will massively change the profile of any 6 month period and can lead investors to wrong conclusions, both positive and negative. Equally, across years, there is always a cutoff at year end based on a particular season and filming. And again, that can massively impact on a year. So any half year or single year comparison can be quite binary. And investors should therefore look at the 5 year trajectory, the 3 year trajectory. And in the annual results, I've deliberately, in a couple of places, pulled out historical journey. And the profit swing that we've had has been considerable over the last 5 years. And I'm pointing to the next 3 years, showing how the profile of the group will grow, because that's really what an investor should look at, the 5 year journey we've been on and the 3 year, 4 year plan ahead, and not pay too much, well, not certainly not worry too much about any in-year or half-year performance.
So to wrap up then, the share price hasn't really kept pace with the P&L, what the P&L has been doing. Why do you think, or what do you think the market is missing?
Well, AIM is down 40%. So let's just put that into context. If this group tracks AIM, it's down 40% as the market has been. We're down 36% over 5 years. So there is one argument that says we've simply tracked slightly better, but we've broadly tracked in line. Then you go look at media stocks and look at ITV, down 38%. Look at Future, down 70-odd%. Look at STV, down 70-odd%. Look at a peer group, and you'll see a whole range of really quite unpleasant numbers. So that's the context of our space. And then you go, okay, look at the performance of those businesses. And then one starts to jump out, which is that Zinc has outperformed its peer group and outperformed the market over the last 5 years. But yet it has tracked the market in terms of negative decline. So that for me is why there is the opportunity here, because clearly it is a growing company in a market where it's undervalued. So there is an opportunity for investors, and look at the range of values that Zinc has had. Zinc has been as high as £1.24 in the past, and it's currently sitting at around 40, 45p on any particular day. So there are those issues. And then there are, of course, the classic issues of a shareholder register, which is well diversified between Herald and Canaccord and Mitan and Edentree and Edale and Ruffer and many others. And some of those investors have had outflows and have had redemptions, and that has caused them to need to do their own particular sort of gymnastics in their finances. And that affects us and the wider market. So that's a frustration, but it's also the opportunity.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.